Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Fourth and final hour on this Monday afternoon, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, and Chase McCabe with you. Let's head over to Clarksville. Let's bring in the AD over at Austin Peay. The Governors kicked off the college football season. Got a chance to watch them on ESPN on Saturday night. A tough loss against Central Arkansas. Gerald Harrison now joins us. Gerald, how you doing?
Well, I'm doing great, but I'm telling you, that's a great – you brought me down. The music, bumper music had me kind of going, and I was really excited. And it's like, yeah, and they lost. And I was like, oh, I remember that now.
And heartbreaking fashion, too. I mean, that was a fun finish. Yes, it didn't get – you guys didn't get the results you were looking for, but, man, what an exciting finish after you guys had just taken the lead.
Yeah, it's one of those things that are you not entertained? That game had some of everything that you wanted in it, and a great finish. The last 4 minutes and the first 10 seconds were about as exciting as it gets in college football.
For the role that you're in, how interesting was it behind the scenes leading up to this game? Because you guys, like I said, you had the eyes of all the college football fans. You guys were the game. You're watching. If you wanted some college football for this season, you got it Saturday night, so all eyes were on your product. But how about behind the scenes? Everything that had to be discussed leading up to this game, what was that like?
You know, interesting is one word. I was scary, nervous. I mean, our anxiety level was high. I mean, there's so many things you got to plan for and anticipate. To your best of your ability. We had to practice and tell our team how to be on the sideline. We had to change the way we normally travel, how we eat our meals in pregame for our student athletes. And then, you know, we're restricted amount of people in the stadium. So we had to manage your donors and your fans who used to being able to do whatever they want to or show up when they can't. They can't. There's just so many different factors that went into it, testing and the protocols. That made it a tough day, tough couple weeks, but the result really, minus the game itself, was awesome. I thought I was really proud of our student athletes and our staff and what we got done.
So as we sit here on Monday afternoon, what has been the feedback from your coaches, their staff, and the student athletes, as you mentioned? What's been the feedback from that experience Saturday night?
Well, you know, Saturday night after the game, I had a couple student athletes pull me to the side and told me, they said, "Miss Harris, I've never had as much fun playing football as I did today." And I couldn't understand it because we lost. But then when I thought about it, you start thinking about what these young folks have been through over the last several months, and their world has changed. What they do, like, we go back to work, you know, and we go back. Those guys, they feel like their job is going to school and playing football, and they haven't been able to do much of either of those. So they were just relieved to be out there, and they had fun. They didn't worry about the mask or whether the person across from them were doing the same protocols that they did. They just wanted to play the game. And I think our coaches wanted to coach, and I remember Coach Loving saying he forgot his mask was on after the game started. You know, pregame, he was all pulling it. He said that once the game started, it was just about the game, and you coach it like you normally do. So those comments alone made it worth all the work that went into getting that game done.
Now, this game against Central Arkansas was down in Montgomery, Alabama. You said that you had to change up some of your normal travel schedule or habits. What went into that? What was different about this trip down to Montgomery?
Well, we normally we're a team that travels in 3 buses, and those 3 buses count all the administrative staff and coaches. You know, we fill it pretty good. We went with 4 buses this time, one person to a row, so to speak, on the bus with mask on, and and our support staff didn't travel with our team outside of our athletic medicine staff, the rest of, and coaches, the rest of those people drove. Like, I drove to Montgomery separate, and our ticket folks and video folks, all those folks drove separately to create more space. And we, you know, so we had a 56 passenger bus that was now 28 seats. The way we do our meals were different. You know, everything was either served to you or individually wrapped or put in a situation. So we needed bigger ballrooms. Thankful to the Renaissance in Montgomery that had more space available because they're connected to their convention center. So, you know, those type of things that you don't really think about, we had to adjust to. Temperature checks before you go, you know, the cleaning of the buses and the disinfecting of the buses every time you get off of them. There's a lot of those type of things that went into traveling to Montgomery for this game.
We're talking to Austin Peay, Athletic Director Gerald Harrison here on the show. And Gerald, take us through the process here of coming to this decision. I think it had to be valuable to you to have the players come to you and say, like, you know, I had so much fun just playing. Because I would have to imagine all of the athletes who see some of their peers not getting the opportunity to play, they're thankful to get the chance. But obviously it was a tough decision, right? And a lot of the teams, you know, who are similar to you guys in the same league and everything are not playing. So take us through the process and what allowed you to say, you know, this is the thing. This is we're going to move forward. We may be going marching to our own drum. We're going against the grain a little bit here, but we're going to try this.
Well, once the Ohio Valley Conference gave us the opportunity, the league presidents voted and said that you could play non-conference games. My next conversation was with our student athletes, and they voted like a legitimate, you know, poll vote on whether they wanted to play, and overwhelmingly they wanted to play. So once we got that out of the way, say, you guys want to be here, let's go. We gave them, just like anywhere else now, we gave them the opportunity to, those who wanted to opt out had the ability to opt out, and we had some to do that. But overwhelmingly, they wanted to play. And that once you get that, and they look you in the eyes, and they vote, and they say, hey, let's do it, the rest of it kind of just, let's put the work in. You know what I mean? Then it's like you're kind of jacked up and say, okay, we're going. And you just put the work in. And what we had to do was make sure that we were following all the protocols that were set up by the NCAA guidelines for resocialization and that we could do it. I mean, because it was expensive. Some people made a decision not to do it because of cost. But we're at Austin Peay, we're committed to using the resources that we had available to pay for the necessary testing and the protocols to give those student athletes the opportunity to play. And we were committed to doing that for all of our student athletes. If volleyball wanted to play or soccer wanted to play, or were allowed to play, we were willing to do that to give those student-athletes that opportunity because that window in life is so small for them. It's easy to say give them another year of eligibility, but we all know that nothing is promised. So if they get a chance to play and want to play, let's try to get them on the field or the court or what have you.
How much have you learned, Gerald? I mean, just think about how foreign it would have sounded to all of us going into the season last year about testing or anything like this. And now I'm sure you've had to ramp up how your system is put into place. How do you test your athletes? What's my budget for it? What has that process been like? Because that seems to be the key to a lot of things, is effective testing for the athletes so that your system works and they can continue to play.
Yeah, I've learned a lot. I know some words that I never knew before growing up in South Carolina and never planned on hearing. And the University of Tennessee didn't give them to me either. So I've learned a lot from our medical people about testing and the different types of testing. You know, it takes, you're right, it does take a great testing program, and we have one, and willingness to spend the resources because it's not cheap to make sure you get those things back in the time period that you need them to play. But then the most importantly outside of that is it takes compliance from your student athletes. And I'll tell you, when we started back in June, you know, I think I don't know if the fear or the respect for the virus was there that needed to be from our student athletes, but the closer we got and they actually saw a chance to play, they became very, very compliant, and they're wearing their mask and they're not going to parties. And, you know, at least if they're going to vote, I guess everybody's wearing a mask and we haven't had those issues. But we they've taken it seriously. So it's a combination of testing plus compliance on the student athlete side that makes it, is the only thing that's going to make this work. And we got two games left, and I need them to follow this through. Until we get through to the, should we get through our fall schedule,
Gerald? What as you look forward, I'm sure the system now that you've played a game, right? I think everybody's curious, and we've seen it on the high school level. Everybody's curious, okay, what are the effects? Because I think there's a lot of health people saying, hey, it doesn't happen overnight. It's a couple weeks before you really know what's happening when you go through this. What are some of this? What's part of the system this week of evaluating and taking inventory? So, okay, we got through this first game. We executed what we wanted, and we're still okay. What's that process like?
Well, we begin the testing process. For us, we don't have a game this week, but we're still in our normal testing protocol. And so we've been advised that if a person has been around someone who has the virus, symptoms and stuff would start showing up 3 to 4 days following. So we're starting our testing on Tuesday. For our student athletes, our coaches are going today and tomorrow, and our student athletes start Tuesday. So we should start seeing results, and we'll kind of know where we are from the game and from the trip to Montgomery. So then we're still constantly doing our temperature checks every day. Before any student athlete walks in any facility, they have to get their temperature checked and complete a screen, go through the screening with our medical staff. Be wristbanded before they can come in the building. So we're continuing our normal protocols. We're doing our testing a little earlier in the week because during a competition week, you have to be 72 hours out from your game. For this, we're starting earlier, which go on the front end. How far away were we from playing the competition against Central Arkansas?
Gerald Harrison is with us, the athletic director at Austin Peay. So, as you mentioned, two games left, Pittsburgh and Cincinnati. Is that going to be it? Is that set in stone? Is there a possibility we could see more? I know the spring schedule with the OVC is possible. What does it in your mind look like after these two games?
Well, for us, we'll play these two games and see where the NCAA shakes out on what we can do the rest of the semester. There's talk of a spring, a fall ball, spring ball type situation. I'm not sure exactly if we're going to jump into that, depending on what window or parameters they give us. We know we'll go into a 12-hour, at minimum, we'll go into a 12-hour work week from our student athletes, from a practice standpoint. Right now, the conference is committed to playing in the spring, and we will participate in that because I believe our student athletes deserve the opportunity to defend their OVC championship, which is the reason that I did not exceed the four-game maximum that they put out there that we could participate in. Some schools in our conference did are playing more games, but I didn't want to do that because I felt like this team deserves a chance to defend the championship. And if you play more than four games, you're not going to be able to compete for the championship in the spring. And we didn't add an additional game because I didn't want to do that unless we played a home game, and I couldn't find a home game to put in the window that the OVC allowed us because we have to play our four games, up to four games within the first 5 weeks of the season. So technically our season has to end on the last week of September.
From your point,
week zero.
Right. From your point of view as an athletic director, you mentioned working with the OVC and the job that they have done as a conference, but we see each conference essentially doing their own thing and having to work amongst themselves from that standpoint. Do you believe that this is a prime example, even though this is something we never saw coming, where college football, the NCAA as a whole, could do maybe a better job of working together and being on the same page so we're not having – the OVC's over here doing their thing. The Power 5 or Power 3 is over here doing their thing. Maybe there's a little more continuity.
No, I would love to see a united movement in college football. I think we all know that needs to happen. Now, how do you get there? I don't think people relinquish their power. And the Power 5s have their individual piece, and I don't think that'll change much. Now, the FBS and the FCS are very different from what it takes to run them, and obviously the FBS is really not run by the NCAA at all, where the for us to win a national championship, we have to go through the NCAA structure in the playoffs. So there's going to be a little bit of difference, but in a perfect world there, I would love to see a leader of college football, like the NFL has a commissioner and the NBA has a thing. I think those things help. And I would love to see one person in that role leading football.
Looking ahead in your crystal ball, Gerald, college basketball obviously very important in the OVC and for Austin Peay. Where are we on that from your standpoint as we get a little closer to the fall in college hoops?
Well, I think, college basketball will happen. The date that it'll happen, I'm not sure. I'm thinking this from the conversations that I've been hearing and targets that people like. It'll be somewhere around the Thanksgiving time, which starts a little bit later and will affect the non-conference schedule a little bit. I think it's how football goes will have something to do with that a little bit early, especially the first couple weeks to see, what we can learn from there. But everybody needs to get used to being modifications in live sporting venues. I don't think that anybody that I talked to is planning on having a full arena for any sporting event. We're already making plans here in the Dunn for reduced capacity and kind of trying to create a little bit of a bubble on the floor level versus what we traditionally have with people right on top of you. So it'll look differently, but I don't see any reason why college basketball shouldn't happen. But you're also talking to the AD who just played a football game before anybody else in the country too. So I am obviously a person for trying to get people, student athletes, a chance to compete.
We're glad you did, by the way.
Yeah, no kidding. and let's wrap it up with this. You brought up, you laid out, which was very nice, Gerald, just kind of the mindset of the student athletes and how important it was to them and the coaches, and that's great. And obviously you played, you've got two more to go. But I just want to ask you, let's end with just what it means to a budget, to a program, to get these three games in for a school like Austin Peay.
Well, it's huge, and there's a couple of reasons that they're kind of not connected, and I'll make it quick. But when we didn't play the NCAA basketball tournament, there was a reduction in NCAA funding to every member institution school. Schools like ours lost 65 to 72% of their funding from that. So that's already one hit. Not having the spring season affects corporate sponsorships and all of that. Not having the fall definitely takes away your season tickets and the value of those. So there's a lot of negatives. So if there's an opportunity like we have with adding the Pittsburgh game to get some unbudgeted revenue, into the department, it's not just going to impact. People think you're taking it just impacts football, and that's a bunch of malarkey. It actually impacts all of the other sports. Like our golf team and tennis team and everybody else should be ecstatic that we're playing Pittsburgh, because that money, the majority of those resources after expenses will go back to the department to support those non-revenue sports and give them the opportunities that they needed to succeed. So those games, Cincinnati and Pittsburgh for us, are, lack of a better word, huge.
We really appreciate the visit. We enjoyed watching on Saturday night. Best of luck the other two games, and we will certainly talk to you down the road.
Thank you guys for having me, and let's go, Pete.
All right, that is Gerald Harrison, who is the Austin Peay Athletics Director, and we do appreciate him joining us. We'll come back. More to discuss here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Don't forget, you can download us and listen to us from anywhere in the world. Yeah, just download the Game Nashville app. Free and easy to do, or you can enable Alexa Skill or Google Home if you've got that set up in rooms in your house or your office, like I do. You can also, and all you have to do is just ask it to play 102.5 The Game, or you can live stream from our website, which is thegamenashville.com. Good stuff there from Gerald Harrison. More games on the docket in college football starting this week. that was, I mean, they had college football eyes on them, and Central Arkansas, who just played them, will be right back at it. Central Arkansas scored a late touchdown to beat Austin Peay. They'll be playing UAB in Birmingham on Thursday night. So there's some games on Thursday. You've got Central Arkansas and UAB, South Alabama and Southern Mississippi. And I think the other two games have been canceled. FIU was supposed to play Jacksonville State, and Rice and Houston have been, oh, those games have been postponed, not canceled. So two games on Thursday night, and then MTSU will kick off their season. They will play a game against Army at 12:30 Central Time on Saturday.
I thought that was a fascinating conversation with Gerald there. You can sense his enthusiasm and how much he wants to have the kids have a chance to play. And he laid out a lot of things that they had to do just to make that first game happen. So there's one, and they got two more here. Really interesting process that they've gone through. And I'm really curious. He mentioned the money that you get when you play somebody like Pittsburgh, and that's unbudgeted money, as he called it. But also, as he laid out all of the things that they're doing, I'm sure there's quite a bit of cost, too, to the testing. He said it a couple of times, that it's not cheap to do the testing that you have to do. So, you know, when you don't have home games and you're not bringing in fans, you know, you're not that messes with your budget. And the added cost of the testing and all the protocols, that adds to your budget. So it sounds to me, though, from what he was saying, that there's still a big benefit to playing the games. And as he said, it's a benefit for the entire athletic program. But that's an interesting thing that I'm sure they spent a lot of time over the past few months putting it all together.
Yeah, and I thought it was – I agree with you, Willie, that it was a good conversation. Because what fascinates me is talking to some of these athletic directors and, you know, school officials, more than just the coach, of all the behind-the-scenes stuff that you were just saying and what we were just talking about. So I hope that all of you listening appreciate that as much as we do, because it's just you can't prepare for this. That's been our theme, that it's so unprecedented that there's, okay, let me look at my notes of what I did. Yeah, I don't have any. It's a blank page. So that's the part that I really enjoy, of just finding out some of the behind-the-scenes things that go into it.
Well, some of that stuff was their travel and how they had to take more buses, and obviously people spread out wearing masks. It was pretty interesting. And like broadcasters and people like the AD and other staff members driving down on their own. That's a trend you're going to see in a lot of the sports, either that or you won't even see them go to the game. On these levels, you probably will, but as we've seen on the pro side of things, as Willie saw and Pete and Hal did on the radio side, everybody, they were just in a broadcast room at Bridgestone Arena as opposed to in the actual arena. I mean, you're going to see, and the NFL is going to go through that. I mean, that's exactly. I wonder, by the way, are they traveling in the NFL? I haven't heard.
What, their broadcast teams?
Yeah. Is their broadcast team going to travel with them to Denver, or are they doing the game from here?
I'm not sure.
Good question. Sure. I have not heard one way or the other.
I don't know if, you know, what's – well, obviously this will be a – so ESPN with this game, Mike Golic Jr., Matt Barry, they were, you know, like you said, they were back at a studio. I wonder if they'll do that with the Monday night crews, if that's the plan, you know, nationally. I don't know. I would assume that you'd probably see a lot of what you've seen so far. And I know that you've had some, like – Kenny Albert's one that, you know, he's in the bubble. They've had some broadcasters that are in the bubble with the NHL and the NBA, but you've also had some doing it from a studio. So my guess is you're going to have a mix. You're going to have a mix of those things. But as for the radio crews,
If I had to guess, I think they will go because you have the spacing in a press box. It's such a big place. There'll be less media there. You don't necessarily have to go with the team.
I don't think they'll travel with the team.
Right,
I don't think that.
That's the thing. I think if they travel on their own, you could do it. They're not going to get around the players in any way, shape, or form. Right, that's just a layer that you don't really have to have. So it just depends on whether everybody feels good about traveling
right.
commercially, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I can give you more.
Because you're not going to drive to a lot of the road games. You're not going to drive to Denver.
You're not driving to Denver, no.
And I can give you more of an idea of just kind of what the setup was last night in Nissan Stadium. So inside the main press area where, you know, the general media sits, there's plexiglass dividers between every seat. You're socially distanced, so not only do you have that, but you're not necessarily sitting next to a person directly. It's more spread out. Inside the radio booth where we were, it was the same plexiglass dividers in between each seat for John and Kelly and Wes, and then I was sitting behind them with the, you know, the engineering setup. So, I mean, that's kind of how it is. I mean, and Willie, you brought, you know, you told us about your setup even from the arena. You kind of had that divider in between you and Mace. I know Mace tried to bang through it a few times, but that's, I guess, the normal. So if they do travel, my guess is that's what the setup's going to be.
Yeah, you can set that up. That it's just getting there, I think, is the biggest problem. True. Is the travel. Are you comfortable traveling, you know, flying? I think that if there's a road game you could drive to, like Indianapolis, you might do that. I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud. I don't know if there's a league-wide policy. It's probably up to each individual team to decide. But only 16 games, I would think you'd try to make an effort to get to at least some of the road games if you can, because there's an advantage to being there, right? When you're there, it makes it easier to call the game. There's no doubt about that, especially – football, I hadn't thought about it a whole lot. If you were to do it in a studio, I think you would want the all 22 for the, you know, the color announcer would really want to see an all 22 or, you know, something that would tell him what's going on pre-snap. You can't see everything just on the monitor that you see on a television screen. I think that would make it pretty tough.
Well, and they pointed that out the other night during the Austin Peay game. Matt, I heard Gojo and Matt Berry both say, well, you know, they were trying to figure out a penalty or something, and they're like, well, we can't see the sideline, because it was something to do with the sideline. We can't see the sideline like we usually would be able to. So that's obviously...
Yeah, that's tough.
You know, that's going to be something that they're going to have to deal with. Because even if, you know, we're trying to figure out what the Titans will do, just from that standpoint, but there are going to be crews, whether it's TV crews, because if I'm CBS, for instance, if it's my, you know, C or D team, I'm probably not going to send them. Probably just going to have them do it from a studio. I mean, you got to think from a cost standpoint too during all of this. But I mean, are you really going to? And I'm just speculating, but are you going to send everybody? So I think you're going to have some in the studio, some on site, and that's just what we're going to have to get used to.
It was pretty interesting to hear kind of the, you know, individually wrapped meals. Just everything is just different. Get off the bus, they got to clean it, right? Just all the different precautions everybody's taking. It is going to be interesting to see if this continues. I told you that some of the games were postponed. I think the one other game that I failed to mention was supposed to happen this weekend on Saturday. It was supposed to be Marshall, and East Carolina was also supposed to play, along with Austin Peay and Central Arkansas. That game was postponed. But as these games start, Memphis, by the way, will be on ESPN Saturday night against Arkansas State. That'll be in Memphis. Just the more they play these, just how these other conferences and schools that haven't been playing or have chosen or said they're not going to play, I wonder what it's like behind the scenes. You know, kind of looking over at, you know, the decision makers, and we're like, really? Huh. Okay. They're playing. I mean, it's kind of going back to the whole, you know, Metro Nashville. It's like, you know, Davidson County. It's like, so you got every county is playing high school football. All these counties are playing high school football Friday nights, and yet they're just sitting there. And it doesn't make things any easier, that's for sure. By the way, I hope the Titans are applying pressure to the mayor. I'm asking for fans. I think they should be afforded the opportunity to at least – I think Nashville SC and the Titans should be at least allowed to attempt to do it and until they can't pull it off. But I think they should be given the opportunity to have home fans, and maybe that will change after the month of September. I hope.
Do you find it interesting, though, along those lines, Darren, that there's not a single baseball team that has had fans in the stands.
Yeah, I know.
That is interesting.
That is.
That you bring that up. Because you're right. Because I kind of figured at this point that maybe some places would try it.
The only reason I can say that, yes, it's a really good question. To me, maybe they're so hesitant to do anything because of all the stumbles and the hiccups that they've had to deal with, right?
Yeah,
it has not been a smooth ride. It has been very, very choppy for Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
Very choppy. And maybe they're just scared to death.
To add that layer.
To add another layer.
But I don't think it will be different in the NFL. I think there will be hurdles. There will be challenges of people getting
some
positive
tests.
Once
a week. Baseball's every day.
Right.
Football's once a week.
That's true. And so, maybe you have more time to prepare. You gear up for the one day. Yeah, I can see that. There's logic to that. But, we're really optimistic. We hear this story about Austin Peay, and it's a great story. And, on the other side of the coin, Auburn has 16 players right now that are out for a minimum of 17 days because of the virus, either at high risk or testing positive. They didn't get a lot done over the weekend. So there will be challenges. There will be challenges. And that is, I think, it's still still too early to declare that you can play without any worry, right? Let's see it for 2, 3, 4 weeks and keep hoping that nothing really bad happens, right? Because every day is a challenge, and it takes a lot of work and discipline. That's the key to everything.
Yeah. But that's life right now. It's not just
true.
We're just talking about sports, and that's because that's what we're paid to do. But, that applies to everything we do in 2020.
No question.
That's everything. So it's not any greater than anything else that we're doing. I quickly ran into and I didn't run. I just walked swiftly into the grocery store yesterday. Are we just back to strongly suggesting again? I thought it was mandated going. I saw lots of people walking around the grocery store with nothing on. And
I was like,
what's going on?
I made a grocery run yesterday. Everybody in my grocery store was masked up.
It was like half and half.
Right.
Wow.
I was like,
well, is it?
What?
I get surprised when I see somebody without a mask now in my grocery
store. I do too,
store.
But I saw in Willie, you and I are Davidson County, Darren's Rutherford, but I have seen a couple of times, and I would say this is the minority, but I've seen a couple times where somebody will walk in the store and they'll have their mask on, and a lot of times they're the kind that you just pull over your face and can then – they're in the neck scarves, I guess is what they're called, that they'll walk in and they'll get past the front and then they pull them down. And they're kind of walking around, and they got them like halfway.
That's not cool, man.
No.
Don't do that. Don't be that guy.
I'm at the point now where I don't even think it's on. I just don't even think about it. I feel it. Like, you can't not feel it. And there are some that are harder to breathe in than others, but it's like, I'm used to it.
I was just wondering if something's changed that I missed, because I was like, why do I see? Because you're right. You get used to it. So we've had this nice little run of, okay, now we're finally used to seeing people, everybody with them on. And then I started, yesterday I was like, there's somebody without, you don't have a mask. Wait a minute, what is going on? I noticed way too many people in the short amount of time that I was in there. I was just running in to get a couple of things. By the way, one of them was plain yogurt, a big tub of plain yogurt for the dogs. Because we're trying to, their breath is awful. It's atrocious. And, dogs, you don't brush their teeth. Yeah, good luck. Try that one. Try that on Sawyer. See how that goes. Chase, I'd like to see you try to brush his teeth.
I'm going to take a hard pass on that.
Yeah. Like to see. Tell me how that goes. So we were kind of researching over the weekend, like, what's some ways around that to get. So we read a bunch of stuff about plain yogurt, and you mix it in with their food.
Huh. I think I've heard that before.
Attempted that last night, and you know they ate it up. I don't know. I don't have any idea if it'll work. But that was one of the things I was just quickly going in to get was plain yogurt, not the flavors. It's just the plain yogurt, and mix it in with their food. So
to your mask question, a couple of people on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, have said that Williamson County has let their mask mandate expire, that they're leaving it up to individuals whether they want to wear a mask or not. Got Greg, Nate, a couple of Nates that have come in saying that that's...
Okay, well, I don't live in Williamson.
I know. I know that doesn't necessarily answer your question.
Maybe that's happened in Rutherford. So we're back to strongly suggesting again or just suggesting? Well, I think we kind of went through all that, right, and kind of know how that usually works out.
Yeah, I am.
Suggesting typically doesn't really accomplish what you're looking to get done.
Huh. No.
Okay. Well, maybe that's the case with Rutherford, because I know it really jumped out at me because I've been kind of used to seeing everybody with masks, and I went in. Maybe they just felt like they were safe because they needed groceries, so they figured the virus wouldn't bother them because they were grocery shopping. It's essential. Maybe. All right, we'll come back and wrap up Monday's edition of Darren, Donick, and Chase next.
This is the end, beautiful friend. This is the end, my only friend, the end.
It is. Just for Monday. Be back at it tomorrow at 10, but this is the end for Monday's show. Last segment. Let's hit on the MLB trading deadline. Today, it's got about, an hour and 15 more minutes? Is it right? 3 Central?
Yep.
So about an hour 15. Let's go over. Anybody have the list? I mean, I can do it, but anybody have the list right in front of them?
I don't have the list. I know some of the trades that have been made already. Robbie Ray going to the Blue Jays from the D-backs is one of them, but if you have the full list, go ahead.
Robbie Ray to the Blue Jays.
Mm-hmm.
From the D-backs.
Interesting one. Robbie Ray has had some problems with his control this year. He's always been a guy, high strikeout, high walks, electric stuff. But this year, it's too many walks, and he hasn't pitched well. But he's a guy that a lot of people are really intrigued with. He was getting a lot of attention. There was some rumors, some other teams too. But the Blue Jays are sitting there at 18-14. They've got a chance to get in there. It's what we thought it would be. There's a lot of teams that are still in it, and there's some teams that have been building for the last few years. The Blue Jays are one of them, and it's time to take a shot. So, Robbie Ray, the Nashville native, or
went to Brentwood, right?
Brentwood High native.
Brentwood High School.
Yeah. Alum, and getting a new address here. Chance to pitch some big games in those powder blue uniforms they've been sporting. I love them.
The D-backs get Travis Burgeon in exchange for Robbie Ray in cash considerations.
Darren, sure, I don't think we have time to go through all of the moves the Padres have made. They've acquired 8 players in the last 48 hours, and they traded 14 guys to get the 8 guys.
They are going for it, as they say. They did a 9-player swap with the Indians for Mike Clevinger.
Mr.
Long Hair, Mike Clevinger. And the Indians got 6 players from San Diego. 6. The Indians sent 2 more players to San Diego in that deal. Once again, San Diego, they are absolutely – so now you're talking about – they got guys that can hit. We know that, right?
Yes.
And now you're talking about adding another big arm, a guy that strikes out a lot of guys. Big game pitcher. I don't know what he's like behind the scenes. He was a knucklehead at the very end in Cleveland, which got him in hot water.
Well, that's the question, is would they have traded him had it not been for that? Or is this just one where you strike while the iron's hot, you have a surplus of pitchers, which is hard to do. The Indians have a lot of good pitchers, as we were talking about last week. They seem to just keep churning them out left and right. And they're in first place, so that's not easy to trade. And Clevinger, though, is a He's a polished guy. That's what the Padres need, right? They have great electric young arms, but they're not established guys that you can count on. Clevenger's getting to that point, and they've got him for a couple more years, but that's why they could get six players or whatever they got back for him.
Yeah, I don't know. I've seen stuff on Twitter that, you know, execs in baseball are saying Cleveland got quite the haul. They like what the Indians got out of the deal. They get a right-hander in Cal Quantrill, outfielder.
You remember Paul
Quantrill?
Yeah, he pitched for a long time. So Cal is his son. He's not bad. You know, he's
I don't know anything about these guys. Josh Naylor, Austin Hedges is a catcher.
Great defensive catcher, no hit.
Three minor league prospects, a shortstop, a lefty, two shortstops and a lefty.
The Padres had so many prospects. It's kind of like the Braves a couple of years ago. It was time to turn the prospects into something. You yeah. can't possibly use all of these guys, so you have to pick who you're going to keep and who you're going to trade to get some immediate help to win. So a go-for-it move by the Padres.
They traded Taylor Trammell, too, who I know is a highly
yeah,
touted
he's
prospect.
Yeah, he's a highly touted prospect. The Indians had him.
Seattle.
And they traded him. Or who was it?
It was the Reds that traded
him. Yeah, right. The Reds traded him to get Trevor Bauer last year.
Yep. And so he goes to the Mariners now as a part of a separate deal as they try and Austin Nola, I guess
yeah.
that's who they got.
Who's the catcher that they want. So they've upgraded a catcher, and they get a top-level pitcher on top of all the other guys they have. It's an interesting team because you got to get through Los Angeles, right? We know how loaded the Dodgers are. But other than the Dodgers, who else really scares you in the National League? Nobody, really.
Well, I would say my Braves if they could figure out starting pitching. And,
but that's
you know,
a that's a
go on
right
a ten,
now.
Have a 10-run second inning and then let a team almost come back.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Is
12 runs to win a game.
They're going to win that division, the Braves are. Who is your postseason starting staff right now? We know Max Fried had an excellent year. And then after that, it's a bunch of who?
Like, well, who's your guy? Ian Anderson had a great debut, but that's one game. So
and he could be special, and that's what you're hoping for. But in the postseason, that's a lot to lean on.
I'll tell you what, if it all – and this is a huge if, but if it all works out and you have Soroka, Fried, and Anderson as your top three, which is what you know what they're shooting for, I feel good about that, but that's not this year because Soroka's hurt.
We had Tony Kemp on the show on Friday. I don't know if people have looked. The two best teams in the American League are the A's and the Rays. That's the two best teams in the American League. And actually, they're the two best teams in baseball outside of the Dodgers. The Dodgers have the best record, followed by the Rays and the A's. The A's got Mike Minor from the Rangers, former Vanderbilt pitcher who's been struggling mightily this year.
Did they play together? Did Kemp and were
not
they
quite.
The same?
No, they missed each other by a couple years.
But I don't know if people still believe that the A's and the Rays are the teams to beat. The Indians and the White Sox currently are sitting atop the Central, just right behind them. The Yankees are just right behind the Rays. The Blue Jays are off to they're having a really good season. I mean, this is the fun part because everybody's about, they're just past the halfway mark of their regular season. And this is going to, because of a season like this and the jumbled mess and kind of a race to the finish line, it will have people excited. It will have people more interested in, now, like we've said before, 60 games is not going to be an option move. But I do think this could really spark them to really get in a room and make drastic changes to create kind of this type of atmosphere every year where more people are paying attention to the end of their season as rather than most of them just going through the motions.
I'll tell you what I'm coming around to, guys, and I did not think I would. I'm
I
coming around to the man on second. The man on second extra innings. I'm coming
I thought
around
you were talking about the doubleheaders. We're seeing so many seven inning doubleheaders.
Well, you don't have a choice there.
I still don't like those.
You don't
still
like
don't,
them?
Still don't like them.
I actually do. I really do.
A baseball game is defined as nine innings.
I agree. Down the road, I'm for more nine inning doubleheaders. I don't like the seven inning doubleheaders down the road. This year, it makes perfect sense. But I'm coming around to the extra inning man on second thing. It's not bothering me as much as I thought.
Here's why I don't like the – not to get off on this tangent, but here's why I don't like the seven-inning doubleheader rule. If your pitcher throws a no-hitter, it doesn't count. Doesn't count in the record books. It goes in as a no-hitter with the asterisk of it was seven innings. But when you're talking about perfect games and no-hitters, in my opinion, those are nine innings. And I hate offset stats like that. Like, to me, you know, that you'd have a pitching staff that combines for a no-hitter and like, oh, the Braves combined for a no-hitter. I'm like, okay, great. That doesn't – whatever. That's a different category for me. I know that may sound silly, but that's how I feel. That's where the purist that hasn't quite let go of everything comes into play. But you ask me why I don't like it, that's why.
So Mariano Rivera and Trevor Hoffman, as we also talked about on Friday's show in Friday Trivia – so they are without a doubt the best closers ever.
Well, they have the most saves ever.
Yeah. That's not my question. You take it however you want.
Mariano Rivera is the best closer ever.
I'm asking Chase, who just said didn't like those offsets. So that they're without a doubt the best ever.
Mariano Rivera is for sure.
I think you'd have some pushback.
So they came in and did one inning. What about all the guys that had to come in and do two and three innings?
That's different.
Why is it different?
But that's their position.
Shouldn't they get more credit for having to be in tougher spots than guys who come in the one inning with a three-run lead and get recorded save as the same guy who had to work three innings to get a save back in the day?
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a relief pitcher.
Well, why don't they get more credit?
Well, I think those guys do.
Do they?
Quite a bit of credit. They're both Hall
of
Famers.
No, I'm talking about the old school closers. Why don't they get more credit?
I don't know.
Their job was way harder. Way harder.
I think they're being recognized more, as you see.
Are they?
Bruce Gossage and Bruce Sutter, for a long time.
Why aren't these guys in the Hall of Fame? We said it for a long time. They finally started putting them in. Why did it take so long?
I don't have an answer for that.
I think it took a while for people to understand that.
I grew up with
the
Rivera
number of
Hoffman.
Saves is only one part of it, and if you're just pitching one inning, and that's not as difficult. If you're always coming in where there's a save on the line, Goose Gossage and Raleigh Fingers and Bruce Sutter, those guys were coming into tie games all the time.
Tough spots,
two and a third innings, they had to earn the save. You know, a blown save, you know, in the ninth inning we're up by three is that's a lot different than blowing a save when you give up the tying run in the seventh inning and then pitch the last two innings and get the win, right? That's what happened to those guys a lot.
So what exactly are you arguing here?
My point is there is no perfect. You say, you know, you don't like offset. There is no perfect. It's all decades change. The game changes. So there is no perfect system. When you say, oh, that's not offset records. Honestly, you can start breaking down everything and realize that there's so much offset. I mean,
okay,
give me a break. Look at the way starting pitchers are today compared to what starting pitchers had to do back in the day. I mean, starting pitchers it was no big deal to go nine innings all the time. These guys get to five or six innings, and then they're out so they can record a win, and they're gone. It's just different. And they get just as much credit. A win is a win, right? It's a W. No, it's not. It's not the same. Those guys went seven, eight, nine innings every single start. It was much harder. They don't get recognized. They don't get extra bonus points for doing that. They just get recognized as a win is a win.
Okay.
Just like the guys today.
You asked me why I didn't like it, and I gave you
I'm with Jace. I'd rather keep
baseball
the
game
innings.
Is defined as nine innings.
Yeah, I like the nine innings. Now, here's my question for you, Chase, on the way out. Do the Braves, based on what we were talking about, will they trade for a pitcher today?
Well, they traded for one yesterday, and it took 12 runs to win.
Who did they trade for yesterday?
Tommy Malone from those.
Well, okay. You know, come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. I think they do. I don't know who, but I think they do. So we've got an hour to figure that out.
All right. That'll do it for us. another fast-moving show. We'll try to do the same thing tomorrow. You have a great rest of your day. Be safe. We want you back with us tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. We'll see you then.
You out into the